Okay, well, here we go. I'm going to ask Dwayne to put that up there on the screen for us. Each time I've gone on this trip, now this is my fourth time going down to South America, I come back with something new and better, I guess, just more, convicting to me or something. This was a little different this trip because I was in so many churches, which hasn't been my portion before. The reason for that is a couple of things. One main thing is that when I was invited to go before, I was going in January, which is when the mission holds its annual business meetings and missions conference. And so it's all the missionaries gathered from the three countries in the southern cone of South America. And they have meetings and refreshment and preaching and teaching in English. And so I would teach subjects or seminar topics that they needed whatever material on. And so we'd be busy. Once we got there, we'd have business meetings for 2 or 3 days with the leadership team of the mission. Then we'd have meetings with all the missionaries. Then we'd have all this teaching and everything. And we'd have meetings on Sunday. And so meetings on Wednesday. So we were just on this at the campsite meeting all the time. So no time to really travel out and about. And I don't like to be away from home and church family too long, so I don't extend my stay too much. That's what the first 2 years were, 2011 and 2014. Last year when I went to this particular conference, which is the pastors of the churches that are gathered. So the difference is the missionaries go down, they've planted churches. Those churches have in turn planted other churches, which have planted other churches over the last 90 years. And so there are churches upon churches that, so there are more pastors in the churches than there are missionaries on the field now, which is a great blessing. So they gather, and they've done it 3 out of every 4 years for the last maybe 10 years or so. And they have, again, instruction and fellowship and get to know each other across the border. The Andes Mountains are a major deal over there. So if you're on one side or on the other, you don't get across them too often. And so they make a point to do that. But the conference is about 4 days, Monday through Thursday. And I decided to go early and stay a little later and have some opportunities to visit with some of the local churches in the area. So whereas last time I visited one local church, that was David Flink's church in Antofagasta, which you might remember I showed you pictures from up there in northern Chile. This time I was able to visit 5 local churches that I hadn't been in before, and it was a great blessing to me to be able to do that. And as I said, I extended my trip a little bit for that purpose, so I stayed a little longer than normal. Another reason I was down there longer was, or away rather longer, was that I used the day airplane flight instead of flying the red eye, which is the normal way that people fly to South America. Most common flights are at night, so I was able to find one out of Miami that flew all day from 8:30 in the morning until 4:30 in the 5:30 in the afternoon, and 9 hours. And so I had my office in the air that day, just doing my reading and studying and stuff. So, but that made it easier because I didn't lose a night's sleep on the plane going and coming. Let's see here. Let me turn this thing on. See if it'll work. Come on now. Wake up. There we go. Okay. So I visited 5 churches in 5 cities. 3 of them were in Argentina. 2 were in Uruguay. Ezeiza is a city very close to Buenos Aires, which is the capital, a very large city there. And that's where the airport, the international airport is. So I went there and stayed in the home of Colby and Lisa Holmes, who are longtime missionaries with GMSA. Colby, I find him to be very like-minded with us in theology and a very sincere brother in the Lord, and his wife. She's from Canada, and they've been there. They have, 4 children, 3 adults, 1 still in the home. Their 2 older boys are going to be married next month, and so they'll be out of the nest, so to speak. And they'll be having a ministry transition. They have planted a church there, and it's been operational for a number of years, and they're going to be looking for somebody to step in and replace them as a national pastor and wife, his wife, and then they'll move on to somewhere else, Lord willing, and hopefully start one more church before their mission work is done in Argentina. Then we went to Chivilcoy, where Tom and Debbie Gibbons are, working in a church and a camp there, doing a wonderful work in the ministry. From there, we went to Carmelo, Uruguay, where Mariano and Becky Proto are. We support the Gibbons and the Protos, as you know. And then from there, drove a couple hours to go to this city called, looks like Fray Bentos, but it's Fray Bentos in Spanish. And stayed a few hours, really, with Sergio and Andrea Duarte, who have been there planting a church for a number of years. And I'll probably say more about these churches as we go through this again with some pictures. And then went to Gualeguaychú with Tim and Christina Gosen and saw their church there. So I preached or taught 14 times in those about 10 days that I was there ministering. So it was quite busy. and lots of Q&A, by the way, too. So I'd have preaching and then, you know, several of the sessions I'd get mobbed afterwards with guys wanting to have questions answered and stuff. So that was a blessing. I love doing that kind of ministry. Some lessons learned. I mentioned, I think, some of these on Wednesday night, but I just wanted to say, like I did this morning, I'm thankful to God for the conveniences that we have, the ability to have good water pressure, running water, functional toilets, faucets, hot water, and the one in the Proto's home. If you want a hot shower, you get up at half an hour early and you go plug in the hot water heater, and you go back to bed or whatever, and then you get up and you can have a hot water for your shower half an hour later. So that's a little different than how we live. You know, we want it always on demand. You know, right there. They just don't have the resources. Electricity and gas is expensive there, and it's a bit more difficult to do those things. Also, the dedication of the pastors to come to the conference is humbling for me. So I was one of the main speakers, and another fellow who's an Argentine pastor was the other. And these guys came from two days' journey, some of them, one day, 30 hours, some of them just 6 or 7 hours by car, and some came by airplane and then had to drive a couple hours to get to the camp, all to come and listen to the teaching that we had and have the fellowship. So it's quite a humbling experience for me to see that dedication. And one I didn't mention, but just I see more and more the deep need for Bible teaching, not only for the people in the churches, but also for the pastors there. It is a great need. The sky is the limit, so to speak. There really is no end in sight. It's just a constant need there. They're getting a lot of things from the internet, and they're getting a lot of confusing teaching or wrong teaching, and it's just it's a difficult situation. So lots of work there, certainly, to be done. So I came to the city called Azasa, and there's Colby and his wife Lisa and Ben and Sam and Jonathan. And they have a daughter who's living in Philadelphia now named Natalie. And she has a health concern of some sort. I'm not sure exactly what's going on with her, but just pray for her. Sam here struggled for months and came close to dying from a very common infection that we call C. diff. Can you imagine almost dying from that? Yeah? Yeah. His intestines were so in rough shape that it took months for them to heal. But they misdiagnosed it in Argentina. By and by, after months of diagnosis, they came back and said, oh, he has colon cancer. Well, he didn't have any colon cancer. He came up to the States, and within 1 hour in the emergency room down in Florida, they found it. So they knew exactly what the problem was. Anyway, they had birds there. This was their parrot, and he would talk sometimes, but mostly he just screamed. yeah, he'd say hola, Yeah. They don't speak in English there, so. Yeah. So he was a nice little guy. Jonathan would have him come on his shoulder and he'd crawl around, and I don't know if you know how parrots move, but they grab with their two claws and with their beak, you know, so they have three points of contact and the thing is crawling all over him and stuff. And they had a lot of other birds there too, just pets. In their house is a little apartment in the back of the church. So it's all one big kind of warehouse building, three-story high. And on the ground floor, you see this semicircular staircase that's made out of metal. And the metal actually will flex when you step on the center of the step, the pad of the step. But that's how they go to their upstairs, and they have three bedrooms upstairs. That is a tight fit, particularly if you're carrying a suitcase. So I didn't even take my large suitcase upstairs. I just left it downstairs and carried my two small bags up there. But that was the pathway to get up to the room, and the bathroom was down here on the first floor behind the stairs, so you'd have to navigate that at night to go to the restroom if you had to. I arrived there Thursday night. Friday night we had a men's meeting, and probably 30 men or so, I can't remember how many. But at that men's meeting, they had a barbecue, or as they call an asado. Asado, it's meat over there. That's what they eat. And a couple things about that. We started out at 9 o'clock at night, got everybody together. About 10 o'clock, the meeting started, had singing. I gave the message. About 11 o'clock, we started eating. Didn't get home until about 12:30 in the morning. And so that was their men's meeting. We could do that on Saturday, guys. Saturday men's prayer. Yeah. We had to drive home, and then, you know, you have to sleep. And I don't know if I reproduced the picture here. No, I didn't. But they cooked hamburgers. These are fairly big hamburgers for all the guys. And then they also cooked some steaks. And they had made those steaks for one person, me. What a treat. And they made these. They're two of them. They were, you know, good size for me. And I got done eating those, and I was totally satisfied. And then the host at the home, a man who was hosting the meeting, said, "No, we have more for you." And he put this piece of steak on my plate that was like this big, like three times the size of ones that he gave me before. And I could not eat it all. I mean, I was packed out. I had so much meat. So they weren't offended at all. We put it back on the grill after I worked on an end of it, and they cooked it some more, and then they gave it to the rest of the guys to finish off. So that was a great experience. Very nice hospitality there, and too much honor for me. I mean, that was a really nice thing. With Colby, I went around on Saturday morning, and we visited a couple places. One was this shop owned by this man and woman, and I didn't ever get the guy's name because we joked that he was the boss. So his name became El Jefe, which means the boss in Spanish. And his wife is named Margarita, and they make things. You know, she sews, and so she makes these bags, and I bought a little leather purse there for Naomi. And she wanted me to try on one of her husband's black leather jackets that she makes. And so I did that, and it didn't fit right and everything. And I asked her, well, how much would it cost me to buy one of these leather jackets? And she got her calculator out and did a little figuring and said she had to go to the Capitol to buy some leather and everything. And she said the price, and it was, I'll tell you the price, it was $150. For a leather jacket. And I thought, well, that's pretty good, but I don't know that I don't have that money. I wanted to give all the money I had to the missionaries, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to do that. And so she said, well, think about it. Tell me the next day or two, and I'll get the leather if you want it. And so I kind of forgot about it, and then, you know, I didn't tell her in time, so I was like, well, lost opportunity there if I wanted to do that. But, yeah, so when I came back at the end of the week, I had made a kind of a circular journey into Uruguay and came back, and late on Sunday night, the before I flew back, I came to Colby's home again and stayed there the night, so I was close to the airport. And he said that Margarita wanted to give you something. And inside of this bag, there was a black leather jacket that was a gift. And she had sized me up correctly. The length of the sleeves, everything was perfect. I have it at my house. It's a jacket, so it's, you know, waist length, and it's not something I can wear with a dress clothes, but that was a really special gift, very special gift, yeah. Come on in if you want to see some pictures, guys. Here, let me back up and show you El Pájaro. Yes, the parrot. He talks in Spanish. Yeah. Pray for this family. Margarita has communicated with me on what's up and asked me, I said, what can I do for you? Thank you for that gift. She said, just pray for my daughter, Melina. Melina is her daughter who's not walking with the Lord. So please pray for her daughter. I mentioned that the stairway that I went up to the second floor of that building, that back here, that was the apartment. This is their church, Church in the Garage. So they pull the cars out and they move these benches forward, and they have church there in the garage. You can see the old piano there and the guitars they use for music. The third floor way up there, that's Sunday school classrooms. There's a stairway you go way up here like this, and you can get to the third floor and go to those classrooms. This is all right in the middle of the city, right in the middle of a downtown area. So it's storefront, you know, when you look at it from the street. When I left there on Sunday afternoon, so I ministered there Friday. Saturday night we had a youth meeting, Sunday morning church, and I preached there, and we had singing and stuff. And then on Sunday at noon we left, and Colby drove me halfway to Chivilcoy, where Tom picked me up at the halfway point and brought me back. On the way, he wanted to stop and get lunch because we just had to run. And so we stopped in this place. I wish I had gotten a picture of the whole thing, but it was called something like Bastos. I think that's a name of a person, the owner or something. But this is a meat, how do you call it? I don't know what you say. But anyway, this is where it's cooking, in this big room. So I took a picture through like glass here. And these are just chunks of beef and chickens and everything hanging there, cooking, smoking and all that. And we went up to the meat counter and asked the guy for sandwiches. And he took this big loaf of bread. The bread was probably, I don't know, I mean, my hand is pretty big. So it was all the size of my hand, the piece. And he had somebody go get a piece of this meat off the grill, so to speak. Took it on the counter, took his huge knife, it was about this long, just like this, and sliced off a bunch of pieces of beef and put them on the sandwich, and off we went. So that was something. That's a dirt floor there, and the whole place was on a dirt floor. It was just a place where, you know, in Ann Arbor, it would have gotten one star if that, you know, and it wouldn't have met the health codes and all of that. It would have gotten citations and everything probably, but that's what it is there. I mentioned these meetings that we had. And then we went to Chivilcoy and saw Tom and Debbie there. And in there, they have a very beautiful home that they've remodeled over the years. And in their basement, this was a root cellar, just a small section of the basement of their house. They remodeled and put a little room in there. And that bed is about as small as it looks in that picture. I say that's made for Lilliputians. Yeah, they did hang off the end of that bed, by the way. But anyway, that was okay. So I guess I had another picture there. This is the front of their church building on the street. This is how it looks. And actually, let me see. There's how it used to look on the inside. It used to look like that. So it's just basically like a warehouse kind of thing. On the inside. Now look what it looks like today. What a transformation. Yeah. So we met here Sunday night, and I preached from the pulpit here, and they had a beautiful church service. They have a projector there. They had the songs, piano over here on the right-hand side, the guitar. They have a little orchestra, several guitars over here on the left. And it was just a really nice meeting. They had Sunday school at 6 o'clock in the evening and worship service at 7. They don't have any services in the morning in a lot of these churches. So, what's that? It's not so much work Sundays. It's just that they're up so late. Nobody does anything early Sunday morning. I mean, Saturday night, like we had that meeting, you know, until 12:30 in the morning. So having a 9 o'clock Sunday school doesn't always work when you do that. So digest all the meat. That's right. Yeah. I took my book of the binding. I bound all the parable sermons together, so I took that with me. So I had plenty of messages to use, whatever seemed appropriate in the context that I was. So I preached a number of parables. I did some of them several times in the churches. The pastors' conference, which is the main reason that I went, is called the Avance Pastoral, or Pastors Advance Conference. Of the Union of Bible Center Churches. These churches were planted by the GMSA missionaries in the three countries mentioned there starting back in 1923. And they formed an association, or in Spanish what's called a union, of Bible Center Churches. So the abbreviation is UCB actually in Spanish. It's the Union of Centros Biblicos. You have to reverse the words in Spanish for it to make sense. So they do the UCB acronym. In Chivilcoy, where the Gibbons live, is here on the map. And just outside is the Parque UCV, UCB Park, or Camp. And it's on the main road, number 5 here, is the main road that runs like up here to the capital city of Buenos Aires. Easily accessible to millions of people. It's a good location for them to have a camp. Here's the sign in the front of the camp. This is the camp caretaker's house here. And then there's a maintenance building behind there. This is, doesn't look like what we're used to, but it's the water tower in the place there. You might remember Fellowship Bible Church donated about $5,000 before to help them erect that water tower. And they have nice water pressure there. Very good water system. So, let's see, what else? There's that maintenance building. Have you ever seen a little backhoe like this that just hooks to the back of a tractor? And you plug in the hydraulic line and there you go. So, that's an interesting thing. This is the main building in which there is a kitchen, a main meeting area, and then there are some sleeping quarters. This little spot right here is where I stayed. I had my own room. Most of the guys stayed in this cabin. There are 6 rooms in that cabin, and they had up to 7 bunk beds in each room. And I don't know how they did this, but they should have put all the people who snore in one room. But I think that was a bit of a problem. So when you're in a meeting like that, you have to bring your earplugs. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to sleep too well. But they had dozens of bunk beds in there, and nice mattresses and blankets and everything, and it was very comfortable. Bathrooms inside of each of those rooms, so it's very convenient. Most of the camps used to be built so that there was a cabin, and then there was a separate bathroom building. You might have stayed at a camp like that. It's very inconvenient, to say the least, especially for older people, and you know, it's okay for young people, but I'd rather just have bathrooms in-house, so to speak. And that's what they've done here, so very nicely done. And so I said all that to say that they had these guys all bunked up in these rooms, and they gave the speaker his own private room and private bathroom. So it was an upgrade from some of the prior accommodations that I had in previous camps. All of you that like to grill, this is a huge barbecue here, not made by Weber, but it is certainly a huge thing. And you can see that this surface here all the way around, they cook the meat on, and that's down here. I actually combined 2 pictures here, this one And then this is the oven that they have in the same, let me see if I can go back here. The oven is back here behind this post, that door, and you can put firewood in there and cook pizza in there or whatever, you know. So very nice design. Tom is quite a builder, Tom Gibbons, and so they have a geothermal system for heating and cooling both. They have solar heat for water, and it's a really good idea for them to have that. The main building has a fireplace, and you can bring firewood in from the outside. You don't have to bring it in and mess up the building inside to do that. That cabin that I showed you is only the first of two. So they're going to have two buildings like that. And the idea is to have, you know, boys and girls or men and women or just families in all of them if they have a family camp. But even though only one cabin is done, we're able to sleep 95 men on site and have the bathroom capacity and everything for them. They've put in a huge commercial kitchen. There, and very nice kitchen. I don't have too many pictures of that. And I mentioned also it's very wet there often. The road that they had, the road was so bad that it was impassable much of the year for a long time. But they found, they bought some trailer loads of stone, crushed concrete, and they put that in leading up to the, it's about maybe a half mile, I want to say. I think it's more than a quarter mile road that leads to the camp complex, and they have fixed that up so it's passable now. It's by no means paved, but you don't get stuck on it now if you drive carefully. I mentioned that many took many hours to come to the conference. The problem that happened when we got there on Monday was that we learned that the mountain passes on the Andes Mountains between Chile and Argentina were closed due to a late spring snowstorm up in the mountains. It was rain down in the lowlands, but in the mountains it was snow, of course. And so they were stuck there waiting on the bus for hours and hours before they could get through the border. So they finally did. And then once you get over the border, at least from the north, it takes about 14 hours driving on the bus to get, I think it's at least 14. To get to where we were. So when the guys got off the bus, they were very tired and needed a lot of rest and shower and everything else. The bus made it all the way, but when it pulled into the driveway, it became stuck. The driver drove off the edge of the driveway into the wet grass on the side, and there's the rut that he left there. And there he's buried up to... halfway up to his axle, I guess, there. For you mechanics out there, this is an interesting device that's hooked to these tires. That is a air supply to keep the tires pumped up on all the vehicles, a lot of the trucks that have that there in Argentina. Our schedule was like this. We had breakfast at 8, then for an hour and a half at 9 I taught. And then the other pastor, Alejandro Pelufo, taught for an hour. We had lunch, and then we had a break until either 4 or 5 o'clock. I asked if we could insert a couple more sessions, and we did at 4 o'clock. So I taught 2 out of the 3 days on some other topics because I had more material I had to finish. So I had a lot of work to do. Then we'd have a meeting at 5:30, another preaching. And then from 7 to 8, another one, either this pastor or me, we split those responsibilities in the 7 o'clock hour. And then we had dinner at 8 o'clock every night while we were there. These are the folks that were there, most of them. Those are the pastors and missionaries. Here's Tim Gosen down here. Let's see who else I can find. A fellow named Alberto, who speaks very limited English, but he and I spoke together, and he was teaching me some Spanish. Julio is here. Pastor Ruben is here. This fellow, that's the fellow here is Carlos. He's from Azesa. Proto is back here. See, right against the wall. Let me see if I can see this other fellow. Here's another missionary, Dan Thompson. Andy Thompson, you know, Terry and Carol's two sons. Rafa Arroyo here from the islands. Let's see, where is that fellow? Well, there's so many, there's a lot of people here, and I'm not seeing the guy that you're asking me about. I'll find him somewhere. This fellow's Pedro. There's Tom Gibbons right there. Sergio Duarte, I'll mention him in a moment. Young fellow David, who is ministering in the southern islands of Chile. Ivan Malwenda, he's a young fellow ministering in a camp. Cesar here, Pedraza is a promising Bible teacher. There's Colby. Well, he's in here somewhere. Sorry. So those are the fellows. Here's some of the meetings. Singing. Imagine 90, 95 guys, pastors who aren't afraid to sing, all singing the word. Yeah, and good songs and good singing time. They conscripted me to run the computer to show the guys the lyrics to the songs. And they have their whole hymnal in the computer there. Then we had a table fellowship, wonderful times around the tables for three meals a day. Pastor Palufo preached sections of 2 Corinthians in chapters 3 through 5, and there's a lot of good messages that he gave. Of course, he did it in Spanish, and so I was picking up pieces and parts of his messages. He preached on one message on the judgment seat of Christ and emphasized in Spanish the words, cada uno, to each one, of us. We will be judged, each one, according to our works, whether good or inutile, he said, useless, worthless works. And so then I taught the six sessions that I did. I did one because the men were late coming from the other side of the Andes Mountains. They asked me to delay my main subject, so I inserted a message that I had not planned to preach or teach to them on divorce and remarriage. That was one that they needed, and it was important to talk about that issue. It's been kind of cooking in the background for a couple of years, so I knew that, and we spent some time looking at that. I did one on dispensationalism, but I had two or three more at least that I needed to do. And then we did the ministry to unrepentant church members, or otherwise known as church discipline. That was the main focus of our teaching. With them. And they have lots of problems with this, lots of problems in their churches. The ministry was very well received both last year and this year. We met for the same conference but at a different location in Chile, other side of the mountains last year, and I taught, remember, on the doctrine of salvation. And they had one young pastor there translate the work into Spanish, and I didn't bring it with me, but I have the booklets, about 70 pages of material that they translated, and they passed out copies at this conference from last year. And that has been apparently very helpful to them, and so I've thanked the Lord. And I want to thank you folks too, because you don't see all the work that goes on behind the scenes, but you're supporting me to be able to study the scriptures and sit at my desk and puzzle over these matters and how I'm going to teach them. And for these conferences, I start sometime in the summer, and I spend a number of solid weeks worth of time working on them. So it's something that does keep me busy, but doesn't relate, could I say, directly to Ann Arbor ministry. Although I use the material when I teach here Wednesday nights or Sunday nights, as you know. So I want to say thank you for letting me do that work for the Lord. On Friday after the conference, we got a good night's rest on Thursday, and then we drove 7 hours. I was privileged to get into this van with a number of men. This fellow is named Jose. Bobby Vallette, a missionary. Mariano is sitting right here. Next to me in the front seat was Sergio Duarte, who lives in Uruguay. He drove the van. And in the back, there's a fellow named, listen to this name, Iguazu. That's his name, Iguazu. So when I met him, I said, is there a place called Iguazu Falls? Have you ever heard of that place? Anyway, that's his name. But And then next to him, there's a fellow here that you can barely see, and his name is Pablo de Godos. He's a co-worker with Mariano. And next to him, you can't see her, just maybe her hair here, is his wife, Marcella. And during the conference, when we were at the conference on Tuesday, I think it was, her father passed away. And the blessing for them was that they were at the conference, and her father lived very close to where the conference was, hours away from where their home is. So they were already closer. And he had been sick for a while, and he passed away. Their customs there are totally different. You know how years ago it used to be if a woman was going in to have a baby in the hospital, she'd go in and, you know, dad would be out pacing in the waiting room and waiting for news and everything. He wasn't allowed to go in there at all. And so he'd have to wait until there was news about his child being born. Well, that's how they do death there. The person is in the room and their family is not there with them. It's awful. It's just awful. And so they didn't know for some hours until after the father had passed away. Can you imagine? It's just awful. So the next morning, there in Argentina and Uruguay, they do not have, you know, 3 days wait until the burial. That's the next day. You're in the ground. So they, Mariano, Pablo asked Mariano to share at the funeral, so the next morning they had the funeral, and they had to leave the conference for a while to go and do that ministry. So anyway, all of us drove to Uruguay. So there we are crossing the border into the country. And I stayed there in Carmelo with Mariano and Becky Proto, visited believers in the church on Friday and a little bit on Saturday. Saturday night, we had a couples meeting. The coworker that I mentioned just now, Pablo, used to do some computer work, and he's unfortunately lost that job, and so we were thinking about ways to get him employed again. But he would literally subsist on about $300 a month, plus some help from the Protos to rent the place where they stay, which their church uses also. And I don't know all the financial details, but that's as much as I got out of it. And just enough to say, those people need help. So that's a big burden on my heart for them. We had the couples meeting. Here's Becky and Marcella, who I mentioned, her father passed away. And then a couple, Sylvia and her husband, I can't remember his name. And then another young couple had been married 3 years, Stella and, it's left me, Ignacio and Joanna here. Here's Pablo, connected with her. So we had this meeting, and Mariana took this picture. We had a time of fellowship and a game, and then I preached the word. And we answered some questions about marriage there, so it was a good meeting. I mentioned a situation about a couple of folks this morning. This is the gentleman. If you pray for him, I appreciate your prayers. He is without the hope of salvation, and really am burdened for that fellow to be born again. And there is Mariano and Becky and Enzo. That's an older picture. This is one I took. This is just off the GMSA website. But there he was at the table. We had several meals together around their little table. And here we had, again, steak, no surprise. All the meals there seemed to have some kind of steak or meat. Then they had this potato dish here. And one of the other lunches we had these pizzas over here. So those were nice. There's their little church building. Yeah, they fixed it up nicely. And so a work team came to help them do the painting and got the chairs. And then the work team, a fellow or two on that team, built that pulpit from nothing. So that was really nice for them to have. And let's see. From Carmelo, I rode with Mariano up about 2 hours to go to another town where this missionary couple, Sergio and Duarte, and Andrea Duarte, live and minister. The funniest thing to me was the pastor's wife. She rides around town on this scooter. I'm threatening Naomi to get her one of those so she can putz around town. But she puts her helmet on and she goes out of the church and zoom, 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 you know. She goes back to the house and gets things ready for lunch. And that was funny. Presently, and this is their son, Martin. Presently, they're also, you want to kill malware bites? There it goes. Presently, also staying with them is another missionary, Bobby Vallette, and his new wife. And he's driving me in this picture in a John Deere Gator. He had cerebral palsy, or has it, so his legs don't function well. He can barely walk, but he needs a lot of help. And so he uses this as his kind of handicap ride to get around town and drive up to his house and stuff. So he gave me a ride in that. And in the back, he was sitting, Martin was, and my bags were in the back there as well. Here's the missionaries that I stayed with just for a few hours and had a meal with them after church service. They have a lot of kids in their church. Let me back up and say two things about that. Number one, with the children in the church, when I walked in, I was a real curiosity, especially to the little girls in the church, and they wanted me to hear me speak English, and they wanted me, in the 10 minutes we had before service started, they wanted me to teach them English. Teach us English, teach us English. Well, I said, we can try. And in fact, at the end of the service, the students in one of the Sunday school classes, the kids had learned about Genesis chapter 1. So I said, would you like to learn Genesis 1:1 in English? And oh, they were very excited about that. So it's so funny to hear them speak, you know, try to say the words. It would be just as funny for them to hear us try to say the Spanish, you know. But it was a funny thing to hear that, and they liked to learn that verse in English. Another thing was, when we drove up early Sunday morning from Mariano took me up there, we passed through a town called Dolores. I mentioned this on Wednesday night, didn't I? And that town had an all-weekend festival, drinking, partying, everything that goes with that worldliness. And we couldn't get through the town because there were floats and music and all kinds of things blocking the streets, so we had to go around, and we did that. And as we went farther north, we saw two things, two sights, people walking on the side of the road, going home, some of them with their thumb out like this, looking for a ride. They had probably drunk too much the previous night, and they were walking home after being there all night. So they were leaving Dolores. And then there were buses coming for Sunday's festivities, and it said on the buses, Dolores is waiting for you, in Spanish. And the double meaning didn't seem to dawn on them, because Dolores means pains or suffering. Sufferings await you. But that's the name of the town there. And that town was one that was half destroyed by a tornado a couple years ago. And so that was quite a situation. So I ministered in the church here, and then Tim Gosen came across the border about an hour away, picked me up, took me back across to Argentina, and I stayed with them in the afternoon, the rest of the short afternoon, and we ministered in their church. Again, they had Sunday school in the evening and evening church, and this is their little church building. I love the simple style of worship with the benches that are movable. The guitar, they had a couple people playing guitar and singing hymns, and it's just a very nice nice meeting they had. Good crowd out. This is probably about half of the people they had. This was in Sunday school. Then during the 7 o'clock hour, more people came, and it was a pretty packed house. This fellow here is somebody that we prayed for. His name was Martin Martinez. He had a problem where he had to have his leg amputated. And you might remember praying for him on Wednesday nights some time ago. He has a prosthetic now, and he was shuffling in, walking on that prosthetic, came into church and led the meeting and made some comments and things. It was nice to see him. I told him we had prayed for them, and he appreciated that very much. I'm pretty much, I think, to the end, but let me just mention a couple of other things, and I can take a question or two if you want. One is, there are dogs everywhere. Stray dogs everywhere. That's just how it is there. The land is flat in this part of South America. There's no mountains here, and it is a lot of farmland. One of the things we saw on Friday when we were driving is a bunch of people walking on the side of the road, different than the ones on Sunday. These people were walking for up to 200 kilometers to go share their devotions to Mother Mary. And they'd be fancily dressed and walking all day, and they'd, some of them in the front of the line were carrying like a, I don't know what you call that, a, you know how when two guys are carrying something and on the between them on the top of this kind of litter is a Mother Mary kind of statue or something. And so they were carrying this and going along walking. And this is their way of doing kind of penance. When they get to the last, you know, say 100 meters or so, they're crawling on their hands and knees, bare hands and knees on, you know, rocks or whatever to go and worship Mother Mary. And it's a sad, sad testimony of works-based salvation. They're just, the people there, it's so hopeless. Mariano said when he was a kid, they would do it. He said they'd have, was it Mariano? Anyway, when they were a kid, they were told, yeah, we're going to be walking all day. Bring your supply, you know, bring your water, bring your supplies, bring good walking shoes, and they would walk. I mean, that's miles and miles and miles, over 100 miles in some cases to do this. An interesting geographical feature was the eucalyptus tree forests that were planted, and those are used, because they're fast growing, they're used to produce paper. And I saw with my own eyes the second largest paper factory in South America. It used to be the largest until another one was built farther down the river. But that's a very big industry there and also very polluting for the water. They're on the river. They use water to produce the paper and then they put their waste out into the water. And it's this, the Uruguay River there is just brown, just ugh. So, but that's how it is there. And I mentioned these other things already. So, anyway, that's what I did. I didn't spend any time really vacationing. We did actually have a couple hours that Mariano took his son Enzo to the river to cast in his line and try to catch some fish, but he never caught anything. Poor guy. But he had a new fishing rod. He had to try it out. So, yeah. Any questions for me? Yes. It was very easy. You just have to have your passport. Well, for me, I had my passport. Those guys have an ID card that has all their information on it, somewhat like what we can use to cross to Canada and back. but it didn't take more than a couple minutes. So you go up to the gate, you present the passports, they kind of look them over and put something in the computer. And then you go at next station and they ask you to get out and they open up the car and look at all the luggage and then you're on your way. So, you know, if you look innocent enough, they'll send you on. If you look like a terrorist, I guess they'll check your bags. Yes.
What about the food besides meat? Were there odd things or unusual? Like, I couldn't eat food. It was considered for restaurants to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the food that I ate was all, I would say, was prepared very in a sanitary way. It wasn't, you know, something that I would have thought twice about. But there are some different cultural practices. I'll give you one. They drink mate there, which is a type of tea. And so it's in a little container. They put the tea leaves in there. It's not leaves. It's actually like crushed up, cut up leaves. And then they pour water on that hot water, and they have a metal straw in there with a strainer at the end so the leaves don't come up. And they let it soak for a second, and then you drink. So a cultural thing, my mate, I might have my hot water. I drink the mate. I pass it to Drew. He drinks the mate, same straw. And it just goes around. Several people may share it. On a car ride, that was common. Two or three of the guys would share the mate around. That's just what they would do. They would be less concerned than our family would be about, you know, if some piece of food was on somebody's plate, they would, you know, they would never touch it because it would be too gross, you know, but in that culture, they don't worry. I mean, just, you know, the guy said, look, can I have half of it? I said, I don't want this whole meat. He said, can I have half of it? Just cut it for me, you know, with my knife and put it on his plate and down the hatch. And so didn't bother him. But I would say all the food was good. There was nothing like goat eyes or anything like that that I had to eat. That's after you go a few times, they ease you into that, right? It really wasn't, how else can I say? I mean, they're not as concerned about germs there as we are here. But I always remember something that Phil Harris said. It helps me on these kind of trips. God gave us stomach acid for a reason. Yes, Tom. Yes, yeah. So it was spring weather, not too terribly unlike what we're having now. Wasn't rainy so much. It did sprinkle some there, but I would say it's probably in the 50s, 60s some days. Maybe it got up to 70 in the sunny part of one day. But I knew it was spring because I started getting a scratchy throat and my allergies started up again, my spring allergies. So I got them twice this year. Yeah. I honestly don't know. I'd have to look that up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 They did have some salads. A lot of salad with oil, a kind of a vinegar oil type mixture in it. The tomatoes and lettuce, maybe some carrots. Fruit was hard to come by. So when I saw fruit, I was like, ah, thank the Lord. Helpful to have that kind of fiber in your diet once in a while. Yeah, Tom. That's funny. I actually did not, because the only reason is that the toilets there function differently than ours do. The bowl is not quite the same, and some of them had the tank was up quite high, and so it just didn't work. It didn't kind of have that characteristic swirl that what we have here. Oh, is it 34? I don't see it here. No, it moved, but anyway, that's okay. So it's actually closer to the equator is what you're saying. What I do know is that it's probably like maybe Tennessee or something like that. I think when I looked last year, Paysandú camp is about where Georgia would be, relative if you mirrored it over the equator. But there it gets so hot and so humid during the summer in January. So... yes. Oh, I was going to Christy.
How is it that the pastors are having difficulty in their teaching? Is it because these are national pastors, like Alaska, Canada, Bible college, or is that
what happens? So their Bible college training, they may have none, or they may have a Bible institute that's provided by the Association of Churches that's several years, but it's not even equivalent to what our Bible college, would be. Like, say Northland in old days or wherever, Pensacola, it just wouldn't be even at that level, I think. So the seminary is, if a few of the guys have done some online training, but seminary training like what I have, I have years and years ahead of where they are on that. So
Nashville is 36.
Oh, okay. Okay, close. That was a guess, so there it was. Yeah. Yes, Vincent.
One of the houses that you stayed at, you mentioned that you played the game. What kind of game was this?
So at the couples meeting, they played, we had the food, and then they played a couple of games. The one that was the last of the longest was basically like charades, I think, where you act out something without speaking. Is that the right name for that game? Yeah, but it was in Spanish. So in this game, it was just single words that you had to get your team to say without saying anything. And, of course, all the words were in Spanish. And so we did our best in that. And then they had a Bible, what was at the end? It was like a Bible trivia, Bible questions. And Mariano is excellent at that. You know, if somebody would get it wrong, this is Mariano's trademark. If they got it wrong, he'd be like, yeah, yes.
And then the translator says, but, and the whole time, and he can rest while the translator is thinking, but the translator has to be fully.
Yes. Yeah, my translator was mostly Colby, who you saw there, Colby Holmes, who's bilingual, and then there was another fellow who helped one session as well. Colby did an excellent job, very good job, but it is very tiring for him. And we did the same thing. Now, I've seen some preaching where the preacher just preaches on in English like he's preaching to an English audience, and then the translator translates on the side, you know, at the same time on the side, and those guys are super duper professionals. It's kind of like the folks that do the translation for the deaf. Have you seen that? This guy's up here preaching along 100 miles an hour, and they're, you know, doing their signing and trying to get it out into to the deaf people there. It's amazing. But I would, the way we did it is I would do a sentence or a part of enough of an idea that I thought would translate okay into Spanish, because Spanish and English are close enough that he would translate, and then we'd go back and forth. And so, if I moved along, I could do like 10 or 11 pages in an hour and a half of notes that way. But it's difficult because I can't stop and say, okay, you know, I mean, I can, but it's just more difficult to kind of add things or do things that I think are fit the scene, the setting, you know, like I would in English. He did not have, although I showed him, he looked at a copy ahead of time. Yeah, Bill. Yes. Yes, they have some books in Spanish, and some of the guys, the younger guys especially, are trying to do that. So, but they just don't have the wealth of material that we have in English. I mean, we ought to be embarrassed by how much we have. Bibles, commentaries, Bible books, schools, you know, we just have so much. It's unreal compared to what they have available to them. So, but you know what? They have a Bible. They have the Holy Spirit. They have other people to help them. They can reach out to other pastors, and so it's not like God has left them with nothing. They do have those resources. So, anybody else? Yeah.
You said your main focus of a message was church discipline. Was that something that they had asked you in advance to focus it on?
Yeah. So one of the missionaries there who is involved with the all the pastors kind of has his finger on the pulse of what's going on and what the needs are in the churches. And he'll kind of, you know, tell me what needs to be talked about before I go there. So I will, you know, just happen to be speaking on things they need to hear. They don't know ahead of time, I don't think, too much ahead of time, although they knew enough to ask when the bus arrived late that one day. They said, "Did we miss his first session? Did we miss it?" And I said, "No, I did. I did something else." So they knew by that time, after being on the bus for 2 days, that you know what the topics were going to be. So, yeah. Oh, I think they kind of figured that out. But I mean, there's a number of other topics that. Like dispensationalism needs to be done. I need to do a whole conference on that down there. They really need a lot of help with that subject. Just because it helps them to put the whole Bible together. It helps them with their hermeneutics to interpret the Bible in a plain literal manner. So they need that. Yes, sir.
I'm intrigued by the description you've given of this amazing walk people are going to. What city was that again? I was wondering.
Oh man, that was between Chivilcoy and the border. So it would have been northwest of Buenos Aires, but I couldn't tell you. We went through several towns.
Do you know if they believe that there's some miraculous event connected with that place?
I don't know, but there are often are places where, you know, Mary appeared and somehow, and yeah, I don't know that. Mariano didn't tell me those details. That's what he told me. Yeah, that's what they told me. And he said when they're doing that, they say, God, if you will, you know, do this for me, then I will serve you. Kind of, you know, they're making vows and this is their act of worship to God, so to speak, to Mary. It's really weird. It's totally foreign. But, I mean, that's why our missionaries are there, because there's... In Argentina, it's a large, large Catholic influence there, and it's really something. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, there's cultural influences of Catholicism, but these people are seriously misinformed and seriously religious to be able to do that sort of stuff, you know. Most people won't drive that far, much less walk that far. Yeah, for zero. That's right. It's empty. I don't want to cut anybody off, but if not, we're going to... Yes, Barb. There was a hospital in one town that I saw, and what town was that? That was in Carmelo, and it was a two-story small pink building that didn't look like much of a hospital. They have two systems there, medical systems. One is private and one is public. If you're in the public system, it's universal kind of health care. It's bad care. It's long waits. None of the missionaries want to go there. And that there's private system. The private system can be a private clinic. They call it clinica, or they have military hospitals like... the fellow who did the translation, or is doing the written translation for me, his daughter this week is in one of those military hospitals in Chile. She had to have a procedure on her kidneys and bladder because something was messed up. She's like 3 years old, and I guess it's a pretty common thing. I mean, at the U of M, that'd be, you know, nothing for them, I'm sure. But they decided to go to that hospital instead of the public clinic because they knew they would get better care there. It costs more money, you know, it costs them money. But, you know, I go back to the example of Sam Holmes. They misdiagnosed him for months on a simple, simple thing like a C. diff infection. And, you know, so if I were, you know, if I were me and I were in a need, I'd be going to a private clinic for sure. And if even that, I mean... the missionaries usually wait on things. Colby actually needs a surgery. He's coming to the U.S. to get the surgery. It's just light years ahead of where they are. So,
the mission has insurance that they can come to the States?
Yes, the mission has insurance through IMG, International Medical Group. And it's a traditional insurance. It has nothing to do with Obamacare, none of that stuff. It's all... old style, so to speak, and they have their deductible and their this and that. But so yeah, they can have procedures overseas, or they can come back here and have them, and that insurance will help pay for that. But it's a lot different. I mean, I should put that thankfulness again on that slide for St. Joe Hospital and the U of M. We can choose either one, or if we want, we could go to Beaumont or Children's in Detroit or, you know, some other good hospitals around. It's embarrassing. We have so much, you know, that they, you know, would just, you know, love to have, but it's not available to them. So, good question from a nurse. They could use a lot of help there, for sure. But it's a different scenario. That reminds me too. Terry Thompson was saying they visited somebody in Gualeguaychú in the hospital. And this hospital building's 100 years old. And I mean, you would not have a baby there. You would not have a surgery there. You wouldn't have anything there. He said in the middle of the day, they're visiting this person, and a rat comes down the hallway and goes into one of the patient rooms. He said that was during the day. He said, wonder what happens there at nighttime. Don't turn out the lights. So that was in a probably particularly bad, you know, hospital, so to speak. But yeah. You want to go down there and do medical missions work? Well, if you go far in the south, it'll be fine. Yeah. Yeah, go down to the islands in Chiloé. And that one young man I pointed out, he lives on an island, which is a minor outlying island, where he has a boat ride to go to a bigger island and then another boat ride to go to a main island where he can get supplies. And then he goes back. But it's a minimum for him 2 hours trip on a slow ferry boat. And he needs a speedboat, yeah, to get any kind of building supplies, any kind of major groceries, stuff like that. Yeah, so it's a different life, my friends. No, it's a different life down there. Yeah, we are rich beyond measure. You know, it's just amazing. Even those among us that are poor, they don't know poverty, really, you know. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for the work you're doing in South America, and we pray for your people down there. Many of whom struggle with basic needs and don't have the blessings that we have. We thank you for your kindness to allow our church to minister to them through this trip that I was able to go on this year. And I pray for those men, the pastors, the churches, the missionaries, their wives, the children. We pray you'd protect them and help them, and may they grow in the grace and knowledge of our Savior and magnify his name as they proclaim the truth throughout South America. In Jesus' name, amen.